This is Dr. Rebecca Daniel Burke, your host for the American Counseling Association's 2014 podcast series. Today we are speaking with Dr. Joseph Dillard about integral deep listening. Dr. Joseph Dillard has over 40 years of clinical experience treating individual, couple, and family issues. Dr. Dillard also has extensive experience with pain management and meditation training. The creator of integral deep listening, Dr. Dillard is the author of over 10 books on IDL, dreaming, nightmares, and meditation. Dr. Dillard has received specialized training in psychodrama, Pearl's Gestalt therapy, hypnotherapy, transactional analysis, reality therapy, rational emotive therapy, and cognitive behavioral therapy. He has directed two multidisciplinary pain management programs. In a broad-based private practice since 1985, Dr. Dillard has treated anxiety, depression, addiction, post-traumatic stress disorder, couples and parent-child issues, and personal development issues. Dr. Dillard lives in Berlin with his wife, Claudia, who is a German naturopath and art therapist. Welcome, Dr. Joseph Dillard.
Hi, Rebecca. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Well, let's start out asking a very basic question, which is, why work with dreams?
Rebecca, dreams are sources of internal information, direction, and validation, and they are also a heck of a lot of fun.
Yeah.
They're amazing, they're entertaining, they're highly instructive diagnostic tools that can provide useful treatment recommendations. They can recommend and indicate how and why a client is stuck. People already have within themselves many of the tools they need to get well, and those who are listening can help their clients to access these tools in an enjoyable and free-flowing way. Dreams can also point your clients toward autonomy and self-healing, where they can learn to be their own best friend and counselor. They can put people in touch with what has been called the healer within. Dreams also mean a lot to clients, even if they don't understand them.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, a frightening, repetitive nightmare, a warning dream, they can have something that feels like a message.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, people can and do draw conclusions, right or wrong, from their dreams that can script their lives.
Mm-hmm.
So there are ways to work with dreams that we will be discussing, hopefully, here today, that minimize interpretation, transference, countertransference, and some of the common, typical challenges that people have encountered in dealing with dreams.
Mm-hmm. Now, please tell us about integral deep listening.
Integral deep listening is one specific approach to dream work and, more broadly, personal transformation that I created in 1980. And it has been in a constant process of development and refinement since then. Before I tell you about it in detail, I want to explain the context of dream work, which is best approached in terms of something called the circle of interventions. There are intentional, effective, cognitive, behavioral, and interpersonal ways to change. Every form of therapy favors one of these five but contains all the others. For example, Jungian analysis is highly intentional. It focuses on how dreams can awaken a future self. It has an effective component in that it wants dream work to bring about catharsis in how a patient feels about themselves. It has strong cognitive elements in that it has definite ideas about what dreams mean and what symbols mean. It's also behavioral in that it looks for concrete improvements in health in people's lives. Also, it is interpersonal in that it focuses on the relationship between the dreamer and the person who interprets the dream. So by far the most well-known and widely practiced approach to dream work is symbolic and interpretive. Freud's psychoanalysis and Jungian analysis are the best-known examples of this. The many cognitive theories of dreams and dreaming fall into this category, such as Coote's theory that dreams alternate between selecting and testing scenarios for problem-solving, and Barrett and Blechner, who have done important work on showing the evolutionary roots of dreaming as a problem-solving mechanism. Hartman proposed that dreaming may function like psychotherapy. Another approach involves the comparison of dream themes, called the content analysis of dreams, which is developed by a mentor of mine, Dr. Robert Van de Castle at the University of Virginia. It is primarily interpersonal in that it compares dream themes and elements among dreamers to find common repetitive themes in order to discover what dreams are and how they work. A third approach to dream work is behavioral, as I mentioned, which ranges from scientific studies of dream duration, emotion, physiological correlates, dream stages, dream telepathy, and anything else you can imagine. These include the neurologically based theories of dreaming, like the activation synthesis theory of Hobson and McCarley, and the continual activation theory of Zhang. While these approaches emphasize behavior, they include the other four types of intervention as well. The fourth approach is phenomenological, following Husserl and represented by Mattern-Boss, and it emphasizes intention, but again, includes all the others. Another approach to dream work involves role-playing, following Marino and Pearls, and it emphasizes interaction, but includes all the other. Integral approaches attempt to take all of these types of interventions into account. Now, IDL, which is the approach that I've developed, is an example of an integral approach to dreaming. Another is Arnold Mendel's somatically rooted, shamanistic, and holistic approach to dream work. Another is Ken Wilber's EQUAL model, which interprets dreams as reflective of developmental level and as self aspects, representative of what Jung called shadow.
It's interesting how many people are very uncomfortable with looking at their shadow self. Do you agree?
Well, the shadow can be pretty scary when you have a monster in a dream.
Mm-hmm.
Or when you wake up and you say, this dream is irrational, it's overwhelming, I don't know what it means. Maybe the best thing for me to do is to turn over, pull up the covers, and go back to sleep.
Yeah, some of them are very dark, and it's interesting because over the years when I've looked at my dreams, I've noticed that sometimes I'll dream about somebody dying, and often it's a part of me as opposed to somebody actually dying.
IDL suspends all those assumptions, whether it's a part of ourselves or not. It doesn't say, all the characters in dreams live in another dimension, and we are going to that dimension when we dream.
Mm-hmm.
Nor does it say all the characters in our dreams are actually parts of ourselves. What it does is it takes a thorough phenomenological approach, which says, I think I need to suspend all of my assumptions about the ontological source of dreams and simply practice something called deep listening to what the dream has to say to me in an integral sort of fashion.
Yeah. How does IDL use all the approaches you spoke about earlier?
It does use all of these, Rebecca, and often in unexpected ways. It relies on interpretation, but primarily by the interviewed characters from the dream themselves, not so much by the dreamer or the clinician. There's a place for that, but it comes later after we have heard from the true experts, which are those emerging potentials that are personified as characters that appear in the dream themselves. It also uses role play, but not in a gestalt sense. Either the role of a dream character is assumed, or the student or client becomes the personification of a waking life issue, such as abandonment, loneliness, or physical pain. A comparison of dream themes with life dreams leads to the conclusion that life and its events may be effectively and beneficially approached as a self-created dream or delusion from which we are in a process of awakening. Now, this is not to say that life is not real, but that our perception of life creates pain and suffering when it is out of balance or delusional, as we have all experienced.
Mm-hmm.
As I mentioned before, IDL is phenomenological in that it asks you, the clinician, to drop the core skill set that you were taught and that you are paid to use, which is interpretation. It does so in order to emphasize a preference for a type of listening that, as I mentioned, is deep and integral.
Mm-hmm.
By deep, IDL refers to a listening to alternative perspectives, not to the roof brain chatter which we normally listen to. By integral, IDL refers to a process of listening that is in harmony with the AQUAL model that I mentioned earlier of Ken Wilber's integral philosophy in psychology. It pays attention to levels of development, lines, competencies such as cognition, empathy, ethical, communicative, artistic, and the self-line. It also considers the perspectives of the interior microcosm and the exterior microcosm, as well as those of the individual and the collective. IDL is also integral in that it emphasizes human potentials or the future evolution of humanity to find solutions to the urgent problems of global warming, predatory capitalism, and the war, and war itself will require the rapid education and evolution of millions, if not billions of people. And the core mission of IDL is to support and hasten the birth of these potentials within the consciousness of every client, with particular emphasis on changing family culture, which is the primary source of identity for future generations.
What sort of client populations is IDL most effective in working with?
Over the years, Rebecca, I have worked with a lot of different sorts of people with many different issues. And so the list is rather long. But the core has to do with the most common problem or issue that most of our listeners are likely to confront in their practice, and that is some variety of anxiety disorder.
Right.
We have seen and had good success with generalized anxiety disorder, or GAD, social phobias, panic disorders, agoraphobias, amazing case of agoraphobia. That I can think of, where a person was totally housebound, had tried every treatment available out there, and within 2 months of working with IDL, was able to resume a normal life again. Also phobias, obsessive-compulsive disorder, using integral deep listening, nightmares generally stop in one interview, repetitive dreams generally stop with one interview. These can be repetitive dreams and nightmares that have been going on for years. And with just one interview, normally they will stop.
What if the client likes the repetitive dream? So it's not a nightmare. It's a repetitive dream, and they enjoy it.
You know, it's an interesting thing, Rebecca. I have not really come across that. I don't know if I can answer it. And the reason why I haven't really come across that is because when you practice deep listening to something, you hear and understand why it's repeating. And consequently, what happens is that now your needs for understanding or growth move to another level. So it's as if you have a sense of completion about that theme, even though it's very enjoyable for you. It's almost like there's a sense of resolution around the need to get enjoyment out of repeating that theme.
Tell us a little about post-traumatic stress disorder and how you work with that.
3 interviews a week for 3 weeks will significantly reduce the symptoms of at least half of all cases of post-traumatic stress disorder, in my experience in working with IDL. I'm trying to be conservative here. I haven't ever had a case where the major symptoms of PTSD were not radically reduced, but that is unbelievable, so I want to ask all of you listeners not to believe me and to be skeptical. Do your own research using IDL with your clients with post-traumatic disorder and make up your own mind. I should mention that any dream is generally understood to the satisfaction of the dreamer with one interview using IDL. While this is simply an aside and take it for granted with this work, it needs to be noted how significant this one aspect of the work is in the history of dream work. It's an extraordinary claim, since generally people have a lot of ambivalence about what their dreams mean, and it's difficult for them to really know what to believe about the different interpretations that they hear. Moving on with some of the other conditions that I have successfully treated using integral deep listening. Insomnia. It's very common. Yeah. It's one of the most common presenting complaints. To the extent that it is a comorbid factor with anxiety, IDEO reduces it significantly. Now, to the extent that insomnia is a standalone or not related to anxiety, I don't make that claim. But to the extent that it is related to the anxiety, I would predict that your listeners will see significant reduces in the insomnia of their clients.
Hmm.
Exogenous depressions, often I could see those getting seriously better within a month to 2 months of sessions, generally 2 hours every other week kind of sessions. Psychological components of head injury, I've done a lot of work with that, particularly the reduction of anxiety and depression and stabilization of mood, which are important problems that complicate the treatment of head injury for those of you who are familiar with that particular population. The psychosomatic components of physical disease processes like cancer, tinnitus, skin conditions, and pain management. IDEO makes no claim to cure any of these conditions. However, again, the psychosomatic component of these can sometimes be huge. Mm-hmm. For instance, I had one lady who had tinnitus all of her life, she said.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened was that when we talked to the symptom, to the tinnitus, it turned into the color black, which congealed into a barbed wire fence.
Hmm.
We interviewed her as the barbed wire fence. We asked her to take the role of the barbed wire fence and asked it why it was there, what it was doing, following the IDL question protocol. And it basically said that it was there to protect her from all the criticism that she had gotten for years from her family and that was still going on inside of her head in terms of the internalization of her parents' voices and her siblings' voices in her head.
Mm-hmm.
And when asked of what the barbed wire fence would like to do about that, it said that it would like to turn into a butterfly. Mm-hmm. When we interviewed this butterfly, basically it could hear. There was no ringing in the butterfly's ears. And I pointed it out to her, and she was amazed. She said, "I don't have any tinnitus." The problem was that as long as she could stay in the perspective of the butterfly, then she had no tinnitus.
Mm-hmm.
The issue with IDL, as is in many treatment processes, is that they tend to be state-dependent. And that is, if one does not figure out ways to maintain the states that are therapeutic, the person tends to regress back into the habitual frame of reference that they have been stuck in.
Hmm.
Now, people with IDL will do a number of interviews over a period of time, and they tend to evolve out of identification with the previous problematic perspective, which is what this person did with tinnitus. But it didn't happen in one interview. It took her a number of interviews, getting in touch with a number of different perspectives in order to finally leave that behind.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Now, pain management, you can have significant reduction in physical pain. And in terms of relationship issues, a lot of times when there is infidelity in relationships, you have issues of how do you rebuild trust.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens with IDL is that when people do these interviews with each other, either in a treatment session or you teach them to do it on their own, they get to know each other on a much more profound, deeper level, which reduces personalization and helps communication to move to an authentic level that encourages the rebuilding of trust.
Mm-hmm.
So I have seen that and been very impressed with the way that people have gotten beyond very deep hurts and redeveloped trust in their relationships. Two or three more areas I must point out. Life purpose, particularly for adolescents, this can be a big deal. Who am I? Where am I going? What do I need to do when I grow up?
Right.
Well, there's no one right path for anyone. I thought there was for me when I was a kid, but I've since learned then it's like a seed being planted in the ground. Life mm-hmm. will tend to make the best of whatever circumstances that it finds itself in. But when a person gets in touch with that unique sense of direction or purpose for themselves, then they tend to make the best of whatever life throws at them with more confidence and more of a sense of being on the right track.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is very closely related to building self-confidence and self-esteem, which are, again, huge issues, mostly for children.
Mm-hmm.
People can learn to differentiate when they're young with just one or two IDL interview, their own inner sense of direction, what we call one's inner compass, from the parent scripting that they have internalized, as well as from the scripting from their peer culture and the broader internet Facebook culture.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody so needs to find and be grounded in their own sense of inner direction. And it's harder and harder because you've got all these different voices saying this is who you need to be when you grow up.
Yes.
Absolutely. Well, IDL tends to cut right through that by getting people grounded in their own authentic sense of direction in a way that doesn't come because I tell them what it is. I don't.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's something that they hear within themselves and they resonate to and say, yeah, this feels right. This feels grounded.
Mm-hmm.
So this has to do with finding or restoring life balance for people, which is just sort of integral or core to getting well and to being happy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So my various texts provide explanations and examples of all these different types of conditions and how they're addressed by integral deep listening.
I think some of our more skeptical people in our audience might be asking, if IDL is so useful, why isn't it more broadly known or widely used?
There are a number of reasons, Rebecca.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, I invite skepticism. I invite doubt. I think that these are healthy because it's only when we answer our own doubts and skepticism that things make sense for us personally, and therefore we can make use of them from an authentic way that fits our own particular developmental process.
Hmm.
I am neither a researcher or a marketer by aptitude or training, nor have I to date written articles for peer-reviewed professional journals. And this is why I'm currently seeking collaborators with a published research background
mm-hmm.
to help me to authenticate and validate some of these claims that I'm making.
Mm-hmm.
While the method itself is simple, it requires training because it is based on assumptions that are radical and novel for many people, both clinicians and clients. Now, I can teach parents and children to use this on one level and to have it be very effective. However, to use it with skill and means, the Buddhist concept of upaya takes training, and that's why we offer training to become an integral deep listening practitioner so that people can learn how to get over their fixation on interpretation and learn how to deeply listen to the emerging potentials that reflect the inner compass of their clients. The therapeutic protocol itself requires a minimum of half an hour to 40 minutes, or essentially an entirety of a single therapeutic session. So this is why I often use a two-hour format every other week, with a two-week break is used for the application of the recommendations that come out of the interview process.
How does IDL determine efficacy?
Efficacy with IDL is best determined by the scientific method. This involves providing the steps for an experiment, performing them, and then having the results checked by peers in the method. That method is empirical. Well, we use it when we cook, with any sort of yoga or meditation instruction, or with an interpretation of Shakespeare, for example. It's not limited to science. Integral deep listening asks clinicians to first follow the methodology in their own lives. For instance, I would ask you, Rebecca, to say, okay, go online, find the protocol, or I'll email it to you, and do some interviews. Do some with yourself. Mm-hmm. Do some with some clients. Mm-hmm. Test the procedure yourself. Out of that will come some recommendations for life change. Look at the results in your life when you apply those recommendations and see what happens. Does your life get better or not? Do the problems the interview addresses get better or worse, or do they stay the same? Part of this is operational. The recommendations are operationalized so that one can score them on a 0 to 10 scale in terms of improvement, or else check them off. Did I do this or did I not do that? So that one can have data by which they can really track whether they're getting benefit from the process or not. The second is to compare the results that you get from your interviews with other practitioners of IDL. That is basically how integral deep listening deals with issues of efficacy or epistemology, and how you know what is true and real about it. Mm-hmm. So as I mentioned before, I'm hoping that other clinicians will work with me to conduct studies of the method for publishing in peer-reviewed journals, and in particular, its effectiveness with anxiety and post-traumatic stress disorder, which deserve such research. So if there are any clinicians who listen to this and who want to collaborate for the publication of innovative research, I'd be delighted if they would contact me.
Absolutely, and we will put your contact information when we post this this to our website. And then a lot of people who are listening are asking themselves right now, exactly how does IDL work? So can you answer that?
Imagine you're sitting with a client, Rebecca.
Okay.
You would ask them to tell you three life issues. Mm-hmm. The reason for the three life issues is to demonstrate the relevancy of the method to the client. In other words, if the IDL does not alleviate major issues of concern to the client, what use is it? Now, they may also tell you a dream. So in either case, they give you three life issues. And then the topic for the interview will either come out of the most important of those three issues, the most salient of those three, mm-hmm. or it will come out of
we have to stop for a minute because you started echoing.
Oh, okay.
Okay, that's good. You're back. Okay, go ahead. I'll just edit out when I said that. Stop for a minute. So go ahead.
If they tell you a dream or a nightmare, mm-hmm. you work on the three life issues in the context of working on the dream. Mm-hmm. If they choose a dream character other than themselves to become, well, they will always choose a dream character other than themselves to become an interview, like the lobster that is running after them in their nightmare, or the fire that is burning, or the brakes of the car that will not engage. Mm-hmm. IDL recommends interviewing an antagonist or an object in the dream, like a cloud or a plant or a rock. Why? Because these tend to have a whole lot more objectivity in terms of their perspective on the dream than you do. You already know what your perspective is, or a surrogate of yourself, which is often some character that you are bonded with in some way or another that appears in the dream. Mm-hmm. Now, as I mentioned, if they do not have a dream, then your client will choose the life issue of greatest concern to them. This could be the basic presenting issue in therapy, for example, loneliness, divorce, grief, suicidality. When they do this, then they will arrive at an image to interview by duplicating the automatic process of dream image creation. So, for instance, when you dream, what will happen is that you go to sleep with certain fears or thoughts on your mind. Feelings will be there. And these are like intentions. And these intentions tend to be associated with feelings, which then are congealed into the characters in the drama in your night's dream. That's a theory. That may not be true, but it's an assumption that we make and that we attempt to duplicate in the IDL dream work process. So you take that chosen life issue, and what you do is you ask a person, well, what are your core feelings around this issue of loneliness? Mm-hmm. Well, okay, it's sadness or grief, for instance. Maybe it's fear that you'll never find somebody who will be a partner.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens is that we ask this person to give the feeling or feelings a color or colors, for instance, blue or gray. Then they imagine themselves surrounded by the color or colors and watch them congeal into an animal, object, or figure. You don't make it happen. You just watch it. You mm-hmm. observe that and see what comes to mind. And a lot of times people say, oh, well, it was an octopus. That's really stupid. It couldn't be that.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a matter of trust. What you do is you don't say, is this rational? Does this make sense? What does it mean? You don't try to analyze it. You simply go with the octopus or the potted plant or Aunt Jenny.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for IDL, the image itself is largely irrelevant. We're not interested in doing the symbolic interpretation of whatever came up.
Mm-hmm.
It is a metaphorical conveyor of a relevant and often transformational perspective. That's the theory. We're going to check it out. The entire process is described for both dreams and life issues on the Integral Deep Listening website under IDL Resources Questionnaire. So a person can go there and they can read more about it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, once the dream character is chosen or the personification of a life issue is created, the client is instructed to become it, to take its roles, to look out at the world from its perspective, and describe what it sees. This is not having a mental image of the animal, object, or person. It is becoming it and answering a series of questions as the character. Hmm. Now, if a person won't do this or can't do this, then IDL is not for them.
Yeah, yeah.
In other words, if a person is unwilling or unable to get into role, mm-hmm. which is a relatively sophisticated ability that people who are borderline, for instance, they will not be capable of doing,
mm-hmm.
then it's almost like a diagnostic tool right there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I do believe that the process of working with interviewing can help people who are borderline or have other character disorders learn to develop the empathy that is lacking from those types of disorders, okay?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I think it has a therapeutic value even for those people. But I'm just saying that that's sort of like a bottom line factor. You're only going to hear what you think if you don't get into role. You won't get mm-hmm. into another perspective that is therapeutic or that is transformational if a person is not willing or able to do that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So one listens to what the character says.
Right.
Interpretation analysis comes later. For the time being, the client is instructed to stay in role, and the therapist, teacher, or parent is instructed to stick to the IDL interviewing protocol, either for interviewing a dream character or the personification of a life issue. And they're really essentially the same.
You know, it's interesting when you were saying some people can't get into role. I remember using the empty chair technique very often in my psychotherapy practice, and I remember for most of my clients could get into role and actually found it extremely helpful. But there were a few people who said, I just can't do this. I'm just looking at a chair and I just can't do this. Is that the same type of thing?
Yeah. Empathy is something that we often take for granted, but mm-hmm. it is. It has to be developed. It mm-hmm. has to be learned.
Yeah.
Now, some people naturally learn it.
Mm-hmm.
But other people don't, okay?
Yeah.
I believe that IDL helps those who don't have it mm-hmm. to learn it. I've seen it grow within people. I've worked with people who had borderline mm-hmm. And other personality disorders, and I've seen them grow in this, okay? Mm-hmm. I remember one guy who was an adolescent who was way on his way to developing a huge conduct disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he turned his life around by learning empathy through doing these mm-hmm. interviews.
Interesting. Now, you talk a lot about the interview. What are the essential functions of an IDL interview?
There are many, and too many to cover here.
Mm-hmm.
They're explained in one of the series of texts written for students of the method, Integral Deep Listening Interviewing Techniques. However, here's a summary of some of the benefits of the interview. As I have mentioned, getting into role mm-hmm. is an intrinsic and essential competency for personality development in adults as well as children. But adults largely lose this ability They acquire stereotyped roles such as parent, worker, driver, cook, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And we really lose the spontaneity of getting into role. So revitalizing this essential skill unlocks creative options for personality development in people of any age.
Mm-hmm.
The next area of where there's a huge function for IDL interviewing has to do with finding that an imaginary or meaningless image, such as a toilet brush or a singing salamander, can indeed be more real and more meaningful than our normal sense of self or our normal reality. And this can be a transformative shock for many, because these don't have wings, they're not angels, they don't have harps, they aren't gods.
Mm-hmm.
These are mundane, and yet what you do, and they're mundane and yet what they do is they end up having transformative value and truth for a person. So this is difficult for a lot of people to wrap their brains around. They don't understand how that could be.
Yeah.
So it broadens their worldview just in that respect.
Mm-hmm.
Getting into role often involves a shift in state, as felt or experienced by the therapist, the parent, or teacher.
Mm-hmm.
So often you'll see a real, authentic, and undeniable transformation that can happen. This is something where a person might, they can take on any role. They can take on, they can maybe be a cloud, for instance. And you see the parasympathetic branch of their autonomic nervous system kick in. They relax. They open up. All of a sudden, their anxiety dissolves.
Mm-hmm.
It's palpable. You see that, and you go, oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is real.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these shifts, while real and often evidential, like I mentioned earlier, they don't last.
Yeah.
So IDL is not basically about catharsis and having gee whiz temporary revelations.
Mm-hmm.
What we're looking for are lasting developmental steps,
mm-hmm.
like learning to walk or talk, where a person actually maintains a higher level of development, not just some kind of a gee whiz,
moment.
An aha. Insight is wonderful, mm-hmm. but it usually doesn't add up to a whole lot in my experience. So this is where the application of the recommendations that are provided by the interview and also the repeated interviews come in. This mm-hmm. is to change state openings to ongoing integrated stage evolution or development for people. The process of questioning also keeps a person in role, so there can be assimilation into an expanded perspective that includes yet transcends your own perspective. So this is a thinning and a broadening of one's sense of self.
Mm-hmm.
There's an expansion of awareness, of self-definition, of consciousness. Now, a lot of people go, aha, that's dissociation. How about
mm-hmm.
ego strength?
Mm-hmm.
But there is no weakening of the sense of self, because the process is not a trance. You do this with your eyes open,
mm-hmm.
and it's the self of your client is encouraged to stay awake.
Mm-hmm.
It's not encouraged to go dormant at any point, as say it does in hypnosis.
Mm-hmm.
They are encouraged to maintain contact with time, space, and identity. Why? Because what we want to do is we want to transform waking consciousness. We don't want to lose it. We don't want to go and live in some other reality. We want to transform our here and now current reality, not abandon it for some other kind of place that really is out of sync with the demands of our everyday life. Each time an interview is done, there is a temporary expansion of identity into the perspective of the character, which we call an emerging potential.
Mm-hmm.
This mostly goes away after the interview as one's normal habitual perspective reasserts itself.
Mm-hmm.
However, it does not go away completely. An expanded residue remains.
Mm-hmm.
With repeated interviews and repeated expansion and contraction of identity, there is a slow, steady developmental evolution into the perspectives of emerging potentials. So, for instance, I mentioned this lady who had agoraphobia.
Right.
Well, This represents a closing down of one's sense of self so that everything is seen as a threat.
Mm-hmm.
And that's symbolized or externalized as, I can't leave my house.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what happened with her is by doing these interviews, she integrated or became perspectives that transcended yet included her own. They included mm-hmm. in that they're parts of her, mm-hmm. but they transcend in that they're broader than her current identity. So by doing these successively, she would do an interview. She would lose most of it because mm-hmm. it's a state awareness, but not all of it. Mm-hmm. Then she would do another one and expand out more, lose most of that, but not all of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's this process of expansion, then contraction, expansion, then contraction.
Uh-huh.
And each time getting a little bigger with a sense of self growing more and one sense of threat growing smaller because mm-hmm. that which is other is integrated or internalized into this broader sense of self. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes.
It's a very powerful and effective way of dealing with a whole lot of issues, but mm-hmm. particularly with all varieties of anxiety disorders.
Mm-hmm.
So,
are there other issues about how the interviewing process is integrated into therapy?
Absolutely. What we do is we check back on mm-hmm. the personal application of recommendations from previous interviews. We do other interviews. We work up an action plan from the recommendations for self-monitoring mm-hmm. for the next week. In addition, there is bibliotherapy. Clients are given reading assignments in the form of chapters from a text-oriented text, a client-oriented text that I've written called Waking Up. Some sessions do not focus on interviewing, but rather on making sure the material in the reading assignments is understood well enough to be applied. And these areas in particular that I focus on are understanding the drama triangle, dealing with cognitive distortions, and goal setting.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the drama triangle, a concept from transactional analysis, involves the three roles of persecutor, victim, and rescuer.
Mm-hmm.
IDL expands on the concept, applying it not only to relationships like transactional analysis, but also to the cognitive realm of our thoughts and feelings, as well as to dreams. Because if you look at a dream, you see those three roles of persecutor, victim, and rescuer in almost every dream that you have.
That's true, yeah.
So the deal is that you can get it out of relationships, but if every night you're going to sleep and you're reinforcing the drama triangle in your dreams, what's going to happen when you wake up? Are you going to be less or more anxious? Are you going to be less or more depressed?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what we try to do in IDL is to educate people to recognize these and to remove them not only from relationships, but also from their thinking and also to remove them from their dreams, which the interviewing process does. So in addition to that, we look at three types of cognitive distortions. Now, Ellis, Beck, and Byrne really focus on emotionally based cognitive distortions.
Mm-hmm.
Those are important to understand, but there's also logical cognitive distortions and perceptual cognitive distortions. And what we want to do is to teach clients to objectify their thought processes to accomplish three things. First, so that cognitive distortions do not cause them to identify with emotions that keep them stuck in pain, misery, anxiety, and depression, we look at those emotionally based cognitive distortions.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, we want them to learn to think clearly. And third, we want them to learn that they are not their thoughts. And the reason we want them to learn that they are not their thoughts is so that they are not controlled by their own delusions, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We want them to learn that thoughts that create fear does not mean that they have to be afraid because they are not their
yeah.
thoughts,
mm-hmm.
for example, okay? And then we also talk in that book, and we also educate people about powerful meditation techniques as a way to disidentify from any and all selves and to cultivate peace of mind. Now, again, disidentifying from any and all selves does not mean dissociation.
Mm-hmm.
It means looking at ourselves as roles and as tools, like a hammer or pliers or a screwdriver, that you can pick up and you can use, but that do not define you and thereby limit what who you are and what your possibilities are. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And what do you say is the basic goal or purpose of IDL? I think I understand what it is, but for anybody who isn't there yet, what is the basic goal or purpose of IDL?
Rebecca, our identity is largely determined by our childhood scripting. But to meet the challenges of the world today, we need to evolve into emerging potentials, potentials that are actually attempting to be born in and through us. The earlier, the better for doing this. Consequently, Integral Deep Listening is interested in interviewing children, in teaching parents to use it with their children, in order to create personal and family cultures that are not determined by family and cultural scripting, whether it's religious, national, or ethnic. One book I've written, Ending Nightmares for Good, focuses on these issues, basically using it with eliminating sleep terrors, eliminating nightmares, and eliminating post-traumatic stress disorder. Think of what it would mean to be raised in a family in which your dream characters and personifications of your life issues were interviewed for their take on the life issues that most important to you, how to study, how to get along with somebody who was a bully at school, whatever. And your family helped you to apply the resulting recommendations from the interview in your daily life. Think of what it would mean to children and to the world if you were raised in a family where you were not only interviewed, but you, as a child of the family, were allowed to interview your parents and help them to apply their recommendations. What would that do to the power structures of families?
Yeah.
Well, it's not that parents would stop being parents. It's just that there would be a period of time out where people would be respected as individuals and develop a support system where everybody was acknowledging and honoring the greatest good within one another instead of always fighting about roles, which is what most family members do in households with children and adults.
Right.
So think about what that might do to the advancement of the core qualities that IDL attempts to develop, of confidence within a child, of their capacity for compassion, wisdom, acceptance, inner peace, and their ability to witness themselves and also all the dramas in the world without taking it all personally. If people reject them, they don't take it personally so much anymore. But it would have made a huge difference for me as a child if I had had those skills.
Sure.
So IDL is currently looking for support in order to try to get this stuff out to more parents and to more children in the world and testing them. So, again, I invite anybody who's listening, any clinicians, to first test these concepts in your own life. And if you find them valuable, then let's see if we can figure out some research protocols to see if we can really transform some lives out there.
Absolutely. This has been really fascinating. I was wondering if you might add a little vignette of a client you've worked with, of course changing the specifics about the client for confidentiality, but a client that you worked with IDL, and it was a very positive outcome, which it probably is for a lot of them, but just one that comes to mind for you.
Well, let's take a post-traumatic stress disorder because those are difficult cases. There was one young man about 18 who worked at a place that had guard dogs. And he opened up the shop one morning, and the guard dogs had not been locked in the night before, and they attacked him. And one of them went for his neck, and the other went for his arm, and he was sure he was dead. He had always had good relationships with dogs, but this shocked him and stunned him so much that he started having nightmares and all the constellation of symptoms that are associated with post-traumatic disorder. And he came to me because he had been doing a lot of other things that just weren't working. The medication wasn't helping. Nothing that he had tried had been helping. And he couldn't be around dogs. He couldn't go back to work. his nightmares were intruding into his waking thought processes, insomnia, the whole thing. So we started doing interviews with him using characters from his repetitive nightmare, which was a literal review of the initial trauma. So it was a waking dream, a waking real-life trauma, okay? Within probably, I would say within 2 weeks, he reported back a dream in which the dog of his childhood was walking beside him and as his guard dog, protecting him as he walked from the neighborhood. Now, think about this for a second. Here is somebody who couldn't be around any dogs at all. Here was somebody who was scared of the idea of being around dogs. He now was able to tolerate having a dog in his presence and to rehearse in his dreams the experience of feeling safe. He was no longer doing the nightmare. He was actually rehearsing a preventive therapeutic protocol to heal the drama that his PTSD continued to work out. Now, at the same time, his insomnia was going down, his general adaptive syndrome of fight or flight, all those symptoms were going down. And within a month and a half of interviews every, well, let's see, we did initially 2 to 3 times a week for 2 weeks. Then we reduced it down to 1 to 2 times a week for 2 weeks. And he was pretty well done by the time 6 weeks was over. He wasn't needing anything else.
That's amazing. That's a wonderful story. To conclude today, I want to ask you a question that I ask all of our podcast presenters, which is ACA currently has 55,000 plus members, most of whom are clinicians. Is there anything I have not asked you that you want our members to know?
Most people stop in their development at a level that's validated by society. All society really wants us to do is to be law-abiding citizens who raise children, who don't create problems, okay? Society doesn't really care if we grow beyond that. They're very happy if we as clinicians help people just to get up to that level. Now, so are our clients. If we can help them to get to that level, that's a huge thing. However, integral deep listening is really about helping people to evolve to the next level of their development at whatever level they are. There's no end. Wherever you are in your development, there are emerging potentials that are wanting to be born into you that will help you to get to the next stage. The issue is, can I listen to them? And if I listen to them, regardless of the form they take, it's a cloud, a rock, a monster, a car, a toilet brush, whatever. Whatever way they appear, can I listen to them and look at their recommendations and then evaluate them by a process that we call triangulation? I want to think about them. I want to compare them to the best I know from experts and external authorities. Does this make sense? And then the third is to use my own common sense. And then based on looking at those three factors, let's apply them in our own lives and let's see what happens. What I will find is that anyone at any level of development, and I have worked with Tibetan monks who were advanced meditators, they will make breakthroughs in their development that will take them to the next level in their meditative practice, for instance, basically by amplifying 6 core qualities in their awareness that are associated with transformation, awakening, and at best enlightenment. And these are confidence, compassion, wisdom, acceptance, inner peace, and witnessing. What they do is they counteract their opposites: low self-esteem and fear, selfishness, ignorance, resistance and rejection, stress, and subjective unconsciousness.
This has really been fascinating, And I want to say to our listeners, I want to thank you so much for joining us today to discuss Integral Deep Listening with Dr. Joseph Dillard. To view links to this program, to write to the presenter or the host, please go to www.counseling.org and click on the podcast page. This is Dr. Rebecca Daniel Burke, your host for the ACA 2014 podcast series, signing off.